Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent, a southeastern suburb of the City of London. I'd like to invite you along to join us for the Divine Service. We meet each Sunday at 10:30 a.m., and we meet for Vespers each Wednesday at 7 p.m. Please join us. I know you'll receive a warm welcome. I also, along with Pastor Wade Bellisbach, work with the good folks at St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride, Scotland. They meet each Sunday morning at 11 a.m. And again, if you live in the Glasgow area, why not come along and join us for worship? You can contact us to find out details about the missions in St. Andrews and Edinburgh, and we'd love to have a chat with you about those. But if you don't live in those areas, go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, click on the directory button, find the congregation closest to you, and go along, pay them a visit. I know you'll be blessed. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio UK. Without your prayers, without your contributions, we wouldn't be able to carry on this ministry, and we are deeply grateful to you for both your prayers and your gifts. Last week, we began a conversation with Dr. Carter Lindberg on Luther and his understanding of charity and poverty relief. Dr. Lindberg is Professor Emeritus of Church History at Boston University's School of Theology. He's the author of many books and articles, and we are talking about his book Beyond Charity, which talks about Luther's social aspects. And we ran out of time last week, but he's graciously agreed to come back and chat with us about this topic some more. So last time we were talking about Luther's understanding of charity and relief of the poor with regard to his understanding of the Eucharist and the worship service, the divine service. But you also talk about how his understanding of vocation played a very important role in dealing with others and helping them out. Can you tell us a little bit about what you mean by that? What is this office or this idea of vocation being so important to Luther and charity?
The context in which Luther lives, the understanding of vocation was limited to the calling, so to speak, of clergy. So, it's only the clergy who have a vocation, which is understood in a narrow sense. And, Luther comes to understand that all the baptized are called, the sense of vocation, are called to serve their neighbor, and that their faith is to be active in love to the neighbor. So it has been argued that releases religious, so to speak, religious energy for serving others. It's not just the special people, the clergy, who have that responsibility and that privilege. And in reflecting on vocation and the Christian's calling, Luther sees this as really quite common, so to speak. That is, vocation is really the celebration of the ordinary. It's where you meet people that you might serve them or are able to provide something for them as well as for yourself in terms of interpersonal relationships. So through his understanding of justification and God's grace, he understands vocation in a much, much broader sense than the late medieval church did.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, Dr. Lindberg, before Luther, the understanding was you serve the poor because you get a reward. You almost, to put it crassly, earn your way to heaven. But is Luther saying that it is our vocation, it's our privilege, it's a response of faith because we've been given, we given to by Jesus, we give to others? Is that correct? And if so, what sort of difference should that make in our lives?
The good news is we don't need to achieve all sorts of things in order to be acceptable to God. That is Luther's understanding of justification or of righteousness before God shifts from a sense of achievement that you somehow work your way up, this whole kind of ladder imagery again, that you somehow work your way up to becoming acceptable to God, but rather the relationship with God is just is received, not achieved. And that then, for Luther, liberates the Christian from a focus on what can I get for myself, some kind of egocentric sense of salvation. Since salvation is already given, you don't have to worry about that. It liberates the Christian to serve the neighbor.
And so let's talk about how Luther then tried to put that in practice. I began reading, and this is what spurred our conversation today, on his 1523, his preface to the ordinance of the common chest for the church in Leipzig. And the early Lutherans really did try to put this in practice. I suppose my question would be, how did they do that? And maybe what do they mean by a common chest? What is implied by that?
Well, I'm a great Lutherphile and want to celebrate his contributions. Luther is not acting alone. He has a number of colleagues. This is also an extremely fraught time personally for Luther, since in 1517 he's starting to get in trouble with his 95 theses, and by 1521 he has to go before the Diet of Worms and confront the emperor and the pope's representative. So this is sort of a daunting time. And in the meantime, he and his colleagues in Wittenberg begin to try to establish a civic support for the poor in the town. This is the first effort, the first expression of this. It's called the Wittenberg Church Order. And they operate, his colleague Karlstadt writes a big tract, "There Should Be No Poor Among Christians." And so they set up what's known as a church order, that is, it is a civic or civil and then also legal ordinance which changes the relationship of the church and the community. And these have often, there's a collection, there are almost 20 volumes of these church orders that have been collected. So it's a great untapped resource for finding out about this stuff. But it becomes a legal establishment for the evangelical church movement. They've often, they're usually looked at in terms of, well, how does the theology change for the church? That is, what do they think about the Eucharist, for example? But there are all sorts of regulations for social issues in these church orders. So the Wittenberg one, which is the first and becomes the model, talks about support for people who are marginal. And I was intrigued. They're not only aware of the fact that some people are unemployed, and need help, but they're aware of the fact that some people are underemployed and need help. And they need help with loans. They need to have loans fixed at 4% rather than like 40%. And there are all sorts of, you know, food and wood for heating and all sorts of things like this that modern social economies, say in Scandinavia or Germany, are aware of. And that becomes a model for other church orders. And the one in Leisnig, which is 1523, what happens is that as the Reformation spreads, both by printing and by word of mouth, that is, the University of Wittenberg becomes a great draw for students. You know, students always kind of go for the radical stuff. So you get all these students, and then a priest coming to Wittenberg to learn about this new theology from all over Europe. Then they go home and tell other people about it. And then there's printing. So these church orders are spread both by word of mouth by various reformers in major cities, but also through printing. And Leisnig becomes aware of what's going on in Wittenberg, and they appeal to Luther to help them set up their own church order to deal with social issues, including, you know, calling your own pastor. And he visits there. It's a town not too far from Wittenberg, south of Wittenberg. And he goes there and he talks to people. He provides a couple of tracts for them. It's a rocky start in the sense that there is a monastic community not too far away that has legal rights over the town, and so they fuss with that. But eventually it all comes to pass, and it is comparable to the Wittenberg order. As in Wittenberg, they have a chest, a big iron-bound chest, and here's where we get the term common chest or community chest, which is outfitted with four different locks, and they appoint four people to kind of oversee the income and the account books. And the kind of interesting development in Leisnig is that they extend the oversight of the common chest, that is the social welfare program that they're establishing, to all the elements of the society, that is the upper class and the citizens and others. And people have a vote on this. They meet, I think, it must have been an incredible amount of work, because I think they meet three times a year to discuss the account books and what they have been doing to support the disadvantaged, which means, you know, everything from people who are poor, who are starving, who need a dowry so they can get married, and who want to go to school. It's a very comprehensive development. And this spreads throughout Europe. I guess I'm sort of rambling on and on here. But one important person alongside Luther with this is Luther's own pastor, a fellow named Bugenhagen, who comes from Pomerania up on the Baltic. He is well known for developing these church orders or these community chests, especially in the north of Germany, going as far as as Denmark, for example. And he also corresponds with reformers in the South. So the places like Strasbourg will also develop poor orders.
I would like to ask you, because reading the preface to the Leisnig Church Order, I was struck by the fact Luther is no utopian. He talks about, yeah, greed is a real, real difficulty amongst people. So Luther did not see this work as a utopian society, did he? He was a very, very much a realist and understood man's sinful nature.
Oh, yeah. No, he is not utopian. I mean, there are, this time period, which is the time of the Renaissance, in the century before and then during the Reformation period, is a time when some people are writing utopias. Probably the best known one is by Thomas More. And, Luther is not a utopian. As he says, we don't expect, you know, roast chickens to fly into our mouths. We need to work at this. We need to establish criteria for assistance to people, and we need to establish how we may meet our own criteria. One of the ways is to actually tax people, so that there is an income, and it will become a kind of graduated income tax, so that there are resources that we can actually put in this common chest to distribute to people who need them. And we probably need to remember places like Wittenberg and Leisnig are really small compared to urban areas today. I mean, Wittenberg would expand every year with a whole bunch of students coming, but otherwise, you know, you have a population of a couple thousand, so it's probably a lot easier to figure out who is needy and why they're needy and what sort of help they need. And the help, by the way, includes also medical help, in terms of a town doctor who will be paid from the common chest, and things like bathing and bathhouses and things for people to improve whatever kind of crazy hygiene they have in the 16th century. So this is kind of hard-headed stuff. I mean, this is not utopian. They work. These church orders are frequently, they might be inspired and take models from Luther's theological reflections, but they're basically set up by lawyers and town councilors.
And you also mentioned, I was really struck by your comment that Luther understood that immorality, lack of love, and corporate corruption did not lie at the heart of, you know, these evil social ills, but rather it was false doctrine. Is that maybe still the case today, or what did you mean by that?
Well, he's not in favor of all these immoralities, but basically he's saying that the social structures are what needs to be addressed. And they're not going, I mean, theologically, he's quite aware that the Christian is simultaneously righteous and sinner. That the fact that how we are accepted by God doesn't mean that we become perfect. It just means we're forgiven, and we can try to deal with life on that basis. So he's quite aware of that, and he is arguing that the social structures need to be addressed, and that there are a number of people who, through no fault of their own, happen to be unemployed or sick or hungry, and they need to be assisted somehow so that they can become hopefully productive citizens.
Dr. Lindbergh, thank you for helping us understand the poverty relief and poverty at the time of Luther. And in your studies, have you come up with, I suppose, things that the church today can learn from Luther and his understanding of how to deal with social issues and ills? Any advice for the church today as we go forward in trying to tackle and help tackle some of these issues?
Well, that's a fraught question. I think for the major denominations, there is clarity, or, you know, insofar as it's possible to be clear, of the root causes for social issues. Then that becomes, as it was in Luther's time also, a political issue. So how do you address that? Throughout his life, throughout his career, from beginning even with the 95 Theses to the last tract that he writes against capitalism, he critiques very strongly the rising capitalist economy of his time. The kind of interest rates they had then can only be wished for by Visa and MasterCard today. Anyway, so he wants to address this, and he says for the church, and this becomes fraught for pastors, he says you need to preach about this. You need to call out the princes, the major banking houses. You need to say from the pulpit that this is unjust, and it is against God's will to manipulate and to take such severe advantage of people. In this sense, he foreshadows the famous comment by the late Brazilian Archbishop Dom Helder Camara, who said, "When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist." So this is a stance that Luther takes. There should be social controls. These need to be set up by the political forces. And the church's role is to preach about this. Now, that doesn't work very well. In the next generation, some pastors do call out the capitalists of the day. I mean, Luther says they should be excommunicated. These pastors are not supported. They lose their job. So it's understandable that the pastor, I mean, the church as a body can make various pronouncements about social issues, but the pastor's job is on the line, and is so it's understandable that this is a difficult scene, but I think this is kind of where Luther is at, that injustice needs to be addressed by the church, and he does not think that that's at all outside the vocation of the church to do that.
Dr. Carter Lindbergh, thank you for helping us understand these issues during Luther's times and even during our own times. We appreciate your time to be with us. And for those who are interested, check out his book, Beyond Charity. It really goes into detail on all of these issues. And thank you for challenging us and helping us to learn more about these. Dr. Lindbergh, thank you again for being our guest.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.